story you could hardly miss. The goings-on in Sudan. The goings-on not only with regard to the government there, but religious clashes between an Islamic government and, at least in the southern part, a Christian population. We're going to be talking about Sudanese Christians here in the first 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. Faith McDonald will join us from the Church Alliance for a New Sudan. Now, coming up in about 25 minutes on the program, open lines for your questions and your comments. I've got a big question. This is a question that's been in my mind for some time. Oprah Winfrey, if during the summertime when my wife is not teaching, more often than not in the afternoon, late afternoon, near dinner time, she'll be watching Oprah Winfrey. Now, I know she does not agree with everything Oprah Winfrey has to say, but she watches. And there's no denying it that Oprah Winfrey's audience is largely women. Now, I'm a guy. Explain this to me. Coming up in 25 minutes, explain this to me, the appeal of Oprah Winfrey. She has a huge audience. She has made herself into a media conglomerate, all rolled into one person, largely with an audience of women. What's the appeal there? I want to know what it is. We'll also be hearing a little bit from Oprah from a program she did where she waxes spiritual there in about 25 minutes here on Issues, Etc. Open lines for your questions and your comments. Part four of our ongoing series with Bob Leko on the Word Faith Movement. We'll be talking a bit about what he calls Sacred Cow Number 4, how the Word Faith Movement defines faith. Bob will join us from 4:30 to 5, and then in the third hour of the program, first of all, we're going to be hearing from T.D. Jakes. He was a preacher in Dallas at the big, Global Day of Prayer service that was held there in Dallas, Texas. There was one held here in St. Louis, had several thousand attendees in Busch Stadium Sunday. We'll hear what Jakes had to say in the course of his message on the Global Day of Prayer. A little bit more open lines there. Then in the last 25 minutes of the program, Pastor Clement Preuss, author of our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for May, The Fire and the Staff, joins us. We're going to be talking about good works. That's the lineup for today. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live Tuesday. It's the 17th of May. Faith McDonald is director of the Church Alliance for a New Sudan at the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C. She is author of an article in the latest Touchstone magazine titled A Refuge of Mercy to talk about Sudanese Christians and refugees. Faith, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd.
For those who have only been catching the headlines or the stories on the radio or the television and are not completely aware of what's been going on in the Sudan, bring us up to date. What's the picture there?
Well, as short as I can, for 20 years or more, there was genocide in southern Sudan. The government of Sudan was trying to make Sudan into one homogeneous Arab Islamic country. And the African Christian population and animist population in southern Sudan stood against them and as a result suffered those results. Now the genocide has moved to the western part of Sudan, Darfur. There's been much more talk in the media about this new genocide phase that has happened. This is against the Muslims, the fellow Muslims of the government of Sudan, but they're black African Muslims, and there's definitely a racial bias against these black Africans by the Arab African Muslims in Sudan. So the genocide now that you hear about, that you might have heard former Secretary of State Colin Powell speak of, is now taking place against these Muslims in Darfur, who have seen that the people of southern Sudan have received a peace agreement after all these years of fighting and being persecuted. Finally, with the help of the U.S. government, the government of Sudan and the rebels in the south came to terms in negotiating for 2 years and came up with a peace agreement. The Westerners in Darfur say, we want something too. We don't want to be under the oppression of the government of Sudan. So they began to rebel, and now they are feeling the wrath of the government of Sudan, and it's a terrible thing. Over 400,000 people have been killed in this phase of the genocide, 1 million displaced, people living in misery in refugee camps in Chad. So that's the story. Now, that's the story that if you look pretty, you know, watch the news and things, you can hear that story. The story that isn't being told is the story that I wrote about for Touchstone magazine, about how the southern Sudanese, who were once the enemies of the people of Darfur, are now reaching out to them and helping them, helping the refugees, bringing food and clothing, offering them forgiveness and mercy. And there's a new thing happening between the people, the Christians and Muslims of Sudan because of this.
Now, to make this altogether clear, we are talking about people who had for 20 years, especially these people in the southern region, the African Christians there, suffered at the hands of an Islamic government, suffered at the hands of their countrymen, and now it is these who have been persecuted who are reaching out to their former enemies, to their people who may still be their enemies?
Yes, they are reaching out to the Darfurian refugees. They've gone to Chad twice now. This is southern Sudanese from the Kansas City area, actually, who now live in the United States and have felt called by God to reach out to their former persecutors. See, they understand better than anybody else could what the Darfurians are going through now, when the Arab militia come in on horseback and kill their men and take their women and children into slavery and rape their women and children. They understand when the government of Sudan comes with helicopters and bombs the villages and sends people who are still alive into absolute panic and turmoil. They understand being displaced from your home the way nobody else really could. And they also understand that the people of Darfur were used by the government of Sudan. The official line of the government of Sudan is use a slave to kill a slave. So rather than have the government troops who were Arabs be the ones to attack the people of southern Sudan, they sent these poor Darfurian black African Muslims in, telling them that they were doing this for Islam. And now the Darfurians in Chad are telling the southern Sudanese, we thought that you were our enemy, but now we know the truth. We know that you are the people who love God and who love us. And it's just an amazing story of forgiveness and reconciliation.
What is what has been and what is the position of the Islamic Sudanese government throughout all of this? How have they explained the genocides to these two faces?
Well, they would say and said for a long time that there was no genocide. They said that they were just, this was an internal Sudan issue, and that the southern people who had risen up to oppose the forced imposition of Islamic law on them and the forced becoming Arabized were rebels and violent people, and they were just putting them down. They're saying the same thing now with Darfur. They're saying, oh, we have no control over these Janjaweed, who are the Arab horsemen. And then when finally push comes to shove, they say, well, the rebels are the ones who have caused the problem. So it's always the victims who get blamed by the government of Sudan.
Another part of this story that you did not write about, but I think is very significant for our listeners to understand, is that often the government had pressed into service. We tend to picture, you know, full-grown men being pressed into service here, but we're talking about children in many cases when it comes to these Sudanese genocides.
Yes. Yes, that definitely the government has made use of children in this way. For a long time, there were reports coming, even way back around 96, 97, from the UN Special Rapporteur on Sudan at that time, a Hungarian, wonderful man named Gaspar Biro, that the government was rounding up the children of southern Sudanese who had been displaced from their homes, and they were living outside of Khartoum, and the government was rounding up their children, just taking them and forcing them into being soldiers against their own people.
Now, these Christian Africans who are returning and extending a hand of peace and of compassion to their former persecutors, what are they risking in doing this?
Well, they could be risking a lot of things. Just just in terms of misunderstanding, it may be that other Southern Sudanese who have not received the grace to forgive yet would say, you know, this is terrible, you're betraying us, how can you do this? So they're risking misunderstanding. They're also risking very real physical danger. Even in Chad, in the refugee camps, they're not far from the border of Darfur, Western Sudan there, and the Arab militias and the government helicopters and aerial bombardment happen a lot. So they're actually risking their own lives doing this. And then also, they would be risking their lives because as Christians from southern Sudan, the Arab militia would have even a targeted view of them. It wouldn't just be that they would be collateral damage if the Janjaweed went after the Darfurians, but they could go after them themselves because of feeling hatred after the southern Sudanese.
We're talking with Faith McDonald. She's director of the Church Alliance for a New Sudan at the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C., about Sudanese refugees, Sudanese Christians reaching out to their former persecutors. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Our call-in numbers, if you'd like to join the conversation, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Just about 10 minutes left in our conversation with Faith. After the bottom of the hour, open lines. I want to hear from you women on why you love, or why women in general, love Oprah Winfrey. Why so many watch her? That's coming up in about 10 minutes for open lines, Issues Etc., lasting an hour till about 4:30. Faith, is Sudan, if we look at Western Africa, and in particular Islamic Africa, is Sudan an isolated incident in the African subcontinent?
No, I would not say it's isolated. I would say, though, that it is setting a precedent, which is a very dangerous precedent. We've already seen in Nigeria, which was a majority Christian country, that state by state, the states of Nigeria are adopting Islamic law, and it's causing a lot of trouble for the Christians. In Sudan, you've got the case where the Christians stood up against this and have really been kind of standing in the gap for the rest of Africa below them. They really feel that part of the reason why they have gone through this has been it's been part of providence, really, to for them to be there as a stand in the gap measure to stop all of Africa from becoming just totally Islamized. You know, we say that people have the right to belong to whatever religion they want to. We believe in freedom of religion. And it's not that we're saying that people should not be Muslims, but no one should be forced to be any particular religion. And the radical Muslims who control Sudan and have plans for the rest of Africa have said many times that they intend for all of Africa and someday all of the world to be Islamized.
We had some time back, and I think this was probably before the Darfur region became so prominent in the news, a Lutheran bishop from a Sudanese Lutheran church body, Bishop Elisa, on the program. He was in the United States and he joined us to talk about the state there. And the picture he painted, even at that time, for Southern Sudanese and for Christian Sudanese was very dire. People who lived in daily fear for their lives from bombing, from their neighbors. You never knew when a machete was going to be wielded against you. And families broken up. Is it any better now?
Yes, Southern Sudan is better because of the peace agreement that was signed in January and even the period leading up to that for the last 2 years of negotiations. It's been relatively stable. There's been a ceasefire and people have not had to fear government bombings or slave raids, those kind of things. There really was pretty good adherence to that. And now with the peace agreement, there's more hope than ever for peace in Sudan in general, but especially now in southern Sudan. And it may get back to the place where Christians and Muslims can live together in peace. There was one point in Sudan's history in the Nuba Mountains when just that happened, that the Christians and Muslims lived together in peace. And it wasn't until the radical government of Sudan started to try to cause division between people, and finally to really decimate the entire population of the Nuba Mountains, that the strife began, and it was considered and pushed down the throat of the Muslim people of Sudan that this was a holy war and they had better participate in it or else.
Is it true that regardless of how things have improved, because it is still a radical Islamic government in Sudan, that Christians or Muslims, whoever they may be, or the animists, the indigenous religion there, that they still live under daily Sharia law?
Well, the people in northern Sudan and in Khartoum and those parts of Sudan that under the peace agreement were given to northern Sudan, they would live under Sharia law. Now, the south, because of this peace agreement, has actually received recognition of their right to religious freedom. Now, we don't know how long that will last. I would say they're not living under Sharia law, but they're living in a precarious state as long as there is this radical government in charge. You know, people need to be very cautious, and the U.S. needs to continue to monitor the situation, and people who care about Sudan and about the persecution of the church need to continue to urge our government to stay involved.
Did the government, there seemed to be kind of a carrot and a stick, mostly a stick, but some carrot when we were hearing about the persecution of Christians in southern Sudan. And one of the carrots was, if you can send your kid to school as long as it's an Islamic school. And very often, the kids went to, even Christian children, went to Islamic schools, may have even been taught the Quran, may have even given the impression that they had converted, but in fact had not. Do you know anything about this?
Well, yes, I know that that was happening, that part of the way that the government of Sudan wanted to Islamize the country was by making sure that there was no educational system other than an Islamic one, and that people had to learn Arabic, and that really they were to give up their cultural identity. So that now, there's an opportunity to stop that. Now, it remains to be seen, because with the peace agreement, the South, from the war, has been devastated. We need for people to come in and to help develop the South, help the southern Sudanese to build up civil society, to build schools. And I'll tell you, we've heard from southern Sudanese that the Arab world has already promised $3 billion to build Islamic schools in southern Sudan. And unless the Christians and people who would like to see just a secular school system step in to build schools, that's going to be what's there. So, you know, we could see southern Sudan become Islamized because of the funding that the Arab world will give it instead of by holy war. So this is an opportunity for people to help to build schools, to help to provide education for the people of southern Sudan.
Is there any indication that the Sudanese government would permit, if money were to flow from Western nations, in order to build either secular or even Christian schools in southern Sudan, that would be permitted?
Yes, because the government is now basically split. The South has, even though it's still part of the government of Sudan, it has its own kind of government, and there are plans for faith-based groups and for people who want to work with the churches in southern Sudan to come in and to to build things like that. In fact, there's Bible schools being built in southern Sudan even now. And, you know, some of these are very small, modest things, but the southern Sudanese are a very enterprising people, all the different tribes of southern Sudanese people, and they can make things happen with just a little bit of money.
What about a possibility of a formal peace agreement like the one that, at least for the time being, prevails in southern Sudan for ending Muslim-on-Muslim violence in the Darfur region?
Well, we need to pray for that. There doesn't look to be anything coming up shortly on that. That's what people would like to see. And we really need to pray that that will happen and to keep encouraging the U.S. government. Now, you know, the U.S. government does not want to disturb the government of Sudan in such a way that they would break off the North-South peace agreement. So it's almost like the government of Sudan has everybody over a barrel, because if we want them to continue playing nicely, then, you know, we can't bother them too much about Darfur. And what needs to happen is for people of goodwill all around the world, really, to use their power to get the government of Sudan and the people of Darfur to have a peace agreement.
Faith McDonald is director of the Church Alliance for a New Sudan at the Institute on Religion and Democracy, based in Washington, D.C. She has authored a very interesting article in the latest Touchstone magazine, an encouraging one about Sudanese refugees and Christians reaching out to their former persecutors. It is called A Refuge of Mercy. Faith, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. It was great to be with you.
The website for the Institute on Religion and Democracy, based in Washington, D.C., ird-renew.org, ird-renew.org. When we come back from this break, we're going to start an hour of open lines for your questions and your comments. Now, Oprah comes on here in about 25 minutes, I imagine. A lot of people, maybe even some listeners to our program, turn on Oprah at the 4 o'clock hour, and they say, wow, this is appointment viewing for many women. Nowadays, Oprah has made of herself a full-blown media conglomerate, all rolled into one woman. Very successful, very wealthy, very business savvy. There's no two ways about it. She is, in many ways, the iconic American woman. She is successful. She is smart. She is savvy. She is sexy. She is what? Well, maybe the model American woman, model modern American woman. She certainly appeals to women. You look at her audience when you turn on the program, or who's buying her magazine, or going to her website, predominantly women. Now, we're going to hear a little bit from Oprah Winfrey, waxing spiritual, giving us some of her, well, going as far as she's willing to go in her theology a little bit later during Open Lines, Issues, etc. But first, I want your answers to this question. What is Oprah's appeal? I'm a guy, so it doesn't appeal to me. Not in the least. I don't know of any guys to whom it does appeal. Now, to those who it may, they can explain it to me as well. What is Oprah's appeal to women? I want your answer to that question. Now, if she doesn't appeal to you, I want to know what it is that doesn't appeal to you either, women. When we come back, it's Open Lines, Issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Call during this break.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Fire is a designation for doctrine, and staff is a designation for practice.
Pastor Clement Preuss on the title and content of our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for May, The Fire and the Staff, Lutheran Theology in Practice.
Fire means the doctrine of Christ and the doctrine of forgiveness of sins in Christ is like a fire. It shines and it heats us and guides our way. And then a staff is what a shepherd would use to prod his sheep in the right direction. And so fire is a designation for doctrine, and staff is a designation for practice. And the book examines the relationship between doctrine and practice, hence the title, The Fire and the Staff.
Order The Fire and the Staff by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or go to our website, issuesetc.org. There on the homepage, you'll find the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for May, The Fire and the Staff. issuesetc.org.
A missionary-run bookstore called Not Just Books is a new development in Italy. This Global Minute asks you to pray this would be a fruitful endeavor for spreading the gospel. Modena, Italy, is a city where atheists mix with the city's Muslims. There are also people who say they're Catholics but may never attend Mass. Not Just Books is a store near the city center with a selection of Bibles, Christian literature, comfortable chairs, and a children's corner. Missionaries with the agency Avant Ministries recently held its grand opening, and more than 100 people stopped in during the first few hours. A high school and technical institute along with a major bus terminal are close by. Pray God would use the Bible and Christian literature to draw many Italians in Modena to himself. Avant Ministries invites you to discover gospel breakthroughs through avmi.org. That's avmi.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. That Secretary of State Rice visited Iraq doesn't really touch our lives any more than a finger in Wendy's chili or the runaway bride. But base closings by the Pentagon hit many people where it hurts. The civilians who work on the base ask, what will we do now? The people who work at the local diner, the real estate agents, the veterans who shop at the base commissary all ask, what will we do now? Base closures fit, I think, under the broad category of life dumps on you when you did nothing to deserve it. We've all been there, under the dumping. There's at least one good thing that can happen when life is unjust. It is the painful reminder that as long as we put our hopes on anything or anyone in this world, disappointment is guaranteed. After all, everyone and everything in this world is imperfect, sinful, and therefore unable to live up to all expectations. Only God is perfect. Only His Son, Jesus Christ, will prove to never let us down. So when we're dumped on, as often happens, it's a reminder to return our affections to the one who promises, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. Hebrews 13:5. That's what we'll do now. Our prayers for those hit hard by base closings. Thanks for listening. I'm Dale Meyer.
On the next Focus on the Family.
It was almost as if God was standing behind me and there was a voice that said, oh, here, Jill, let me introduce you to your new son.
Jill Savage shares how God took her desire to add to her family and led her to the wonderful miracle of adoption. Don't miss her inspirational story on the next Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Now, I know what appeals to a man, and because I am one, and generally speaking, I'm about as average as you can possibly get. If you looked up average guy in the dictionary, probably be a picture of me there. I mean, average in almost every way. So I know what appeals to a man. I have yet to figure out women. I've got two in my house, not counting the dog. She's a woman, but she's easier to understand, much easier to understand, very simple to understand. I've been married 18 years. I have this is how I put it, a working knowledge, a functional knowledge of how to deal with the fair sex. But no expertise whatsoever. And now I have a 13-year-old child come woman, and I'm learning a little bit more, watching it from the nascent stages. Well, Oprah Winfrey was the subject of a Washington Post column by Eugene Robinson recently, talking about women. Women love Oprah. In fact, Robinson says, it, in some cases, and I don't think it's overstating the case, it goes as far as religious fervor. In fact, I've written about this recently in an article for the Issues Etc. journal. It was the last journal that we put out. The next one's coming up. But the last one we put out started out talking about Oprah and her appeal to women. The article is called Churches for Girls. Just a bit from what Eugene Robinson wrote recently in the Washington Post, and this got spread all over the country. Oprah Winfrey, she has this Live Your Best Life 2005 tour. Robinson writes, the tour had touched down in the nation's capital And at mid-morning Saturday, the line stretched around the block. Those in the well-behaved, beautifully dressed crowd had paid at least $185 apiece for the chance to bask in the ladies' presence. All 5,000 tickets sold out within minutes of their offering, and in the days before the event, scalpers on the internet were asking up to $715 apiece to do what? To spend just a little time with your other 5,000 attendees with Oprah Winfrey. The scene was the same when Oprah's show hit Denver a couple weeks, and doubtless will be the same when it hits Dallas later this month. A little voice in my head, writes Robinson, started murmuring, cult of Oprah, cult of Oprah, cult of Oprah, but the little voice had it wrong. Martha Stewart has a cult with rituals, fetishes, applying sprinkles to a frosted cupcake one by one with tweezers, that sort of thing. Oprah presides over something grander, more significant. It's more like a church, writes Eugene Robinson. Now, he goes on to say that all of the characteristics that you would apply to a formal institutional religion could also, at least at this stage, be applied to those who follow, those who watch, those who read, those who listen to Oprah Winfrey. I mean, talking about the fans, the people who will plunk down $175 or $185 apiece to see her in person, or who will stand in lines around the block, or who will pay online on the internet $715 apiece for tickets to see Oprah. That takes on a religious fervor, if you ask me. Have you ever watched Oprah lately? I was watching one day when it was her big... She gives away stuff. Remember, last year she gave away the cars. And, I mean, everybody got a car in the audience. Everybody got a car. Then she did another one of these giveaways. This time she was just giving away, they call them accessories. Purses, handbags, sweaters, belts, you name it. From the very finest of manufacturers. Everyone. She had an audience of teachers. She gave every woman, there were two men I could count, every woman in the audience, everything on her wish list. And the women, it was like watching a religious revival. Crying, screaming, hugging one another. Some could barely get out of their chairs. Some were like fainting back into their chairs. I too was tempted to say cult of Oprah, cult of Oprah. What is the appeal of Oprah Winfrey? I mean, you're not the super fan. You're not the person who would pay $715 to go see her, but you would watch her as often as you can. I want to hear from you women. What's the appeal of Oprah Winfrey? Do you think that Eugene Robinson has it right when he writes in the Washington Post that this is not just a cult like Martha Stewart and her doilies? This is a church, the church of Oprah. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In fact, he quotes from Brenda Johnson, who's a former librarian who had come to see Oprah there in Washington, D.C., with a friend of hers who is an elementary school principal. You could really put Reverend in front of her name. That's what this woman says. She considers Oprah to be, would you call her the high priestess or... the pastor of her own church. Her church is via television, via her publishing enterprises, but it takes on all the hallmarks of a church. She just has the ability to connect on so many levels, your emotional needs, physical needs, psychological needs, says Johnson. And her friend added, it's her humanity. Everybody goes through the same thing that she goes through, but she has the willingness to share it. Well, it's true. We've watched, all of us, even those who don't watch Oprah, have watched her when she was heavy, when she was thin, when she was going through, well, she's never been married as far as I know, but going through man troubles, when she's on top of the world, when she's struggling with this or that or the other thing. Is that the appeal of Oprah? Are you one of those who watches Oprah Winfrey? And if so, I really do want to know, what's the appeal? I don't get it. I'll be completely honest with you. I don't get it. Enlighten me. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you watch Oprah Winfrey, why? What is the appeal there? I sit there and watch my wife during the summer. She'll sit and watch Oprah as many afternoons as she doesn't. And she doesn't agree with Oprah. She's very frustrated by saying things that Oprah and her guests often say. But she watches. I can't figure it out. 505-780-1800-730-2727. Here again from Robinson's Washington Post column, Church of Oprah. Oprah's greatest gift and the foundation of her lay ministry is her understanding that even women who have enjoyed great success in their personal and professional lives can still struggle to find meaning and fulfillment, and that they can learn from Oprah's own search for the same things. Oprah gets fat, Oprah goes on a diet. Oprah loses the weight, Oprah gains it back. Oprah loses it again, maybe this time for good. Oprah fights an ongoing battle with her hair. Oprah's relationship with her significant other seems to be lacking something, since she and Stedman never get married, but she hangs in there with him anyway. Oprah has a best friend, Gail, who sticks with her through everything. Oprah makes charitable gifts. Boy, does she. She's a very charitable woman. Is that what you like about her? I mean, she is a nice person. And generous. So what's the appeal of Oprah Winfrey? Or if you're one of those who just can't stand watching Oprah Winfrey and you're a woman, I want to hear from you as well. What is it that would repel you from Oprah Winfrey? I'm not repelled. I just don't see the appeal. And I would appreciate someone explaining it to me. 505-780-1800-730-2727. While we wait for your phone calls, here's an example of something you might hear on Oprah Winfrey. The subject in this case was God and people's various paths to God.
A panel has been discussing the spirituality and the forces of God, but I also believe that there are two forces that are here with us, that we do have our God that we can depend on, but there's also a power of darkness that we do need to be aware of.
Do you believe that you can choose between one or the other?
Most absolute definitely.
Yeah.
Now,
Marianne Williamson says in her book, Return to Love, that we're always walking in the direction of one or the other, that all of your actions in life, either you're moving toward the darkness or you're moving toward the light.
That's right.
She calls it fear and love. There's this wonderful book called Ishmael by Daniel Quinn, anyway, it's a gorilla talking, but anyway. It talks about, one of the points it brings out is one of the mistakes that human beings make is believing that there is only one way to live.
That's
and
right.
That we don't accept that there are diverse ways of being in the world, that there are millions of ways to be
then
a human being. And many ways, no, but many paths to what you call God.
That
and
is
her
crazy.
Path might be something else, and when she gets there, she might call it the light. But her loving and her kindness and her generosity brings her, if it brings her to the same point that it brings you, it doesn't matter whether she called it God along the way or not.
And I guess the danger that could be on that, I mean, it sounds great on the onset, but if you really look at both sides,
there couldn't possibly be just one way. What about
Jesus?
What about Jesus?
That even brings them up in this whole discussion, and you say there isn't only one way.
There is one way and only one way, and that is through Jesus.
There couldn't possibly be with
a million
people in the world.
Because you say there isn't.
There couldn't possibly be.
Because you say, you intellectualize it and say there isn't. If you don't believe that, you're all buying into the lie.
But that makes you right.
Do you think that if you are somewhere on the planet, if you're somewhere on the planet and you never hear the name of Jesus, you never hear the name of Jesus, but yet you live with a loving heart, you lived as Jesus would have had you to live, you lived for the same purpose that Jesus came to the planet to teach us all, but you are in some remote part of the earth and you never heard the name of Jesus, you cannot get to heaven, you think?
And that is covered in the scriptures too. People
heart,
are talked about
truly,
that.
God knows the heart.
Does God care about your heart or God care about if you call his son Jesus?
Well, you know, Oprah, God, Jesus cannot come back until that gospel is preached in the four corners of this earth. So, you know, figure it out.
Okay, I can't get into a religious argument with you.
It's not religion, Oprah.
I can't get into a religious argument with you.
Okay, that was the Oprah Winfrey Show from some time back. They were talking about ways to God. Now, it may not have been evident from what you heard there, but the conversation about Jesus began not with one of the panelists, but with just some woman who literally stood up without being called upon in the audience. She and her friend were trying to make the case that you know, this is confusing when we talk about there being many ways, which was what Oprah was putting forth. Now, she went beyond, of course, being a moderator in that conversation. She definitely has a viewpoint when it comes to these things. There are millions of ways to God. There has to be. There can't be just one way. She said it many times. And then when faced with the hard question of, well, what about Jesus? She said, well, I can't get into a religious argument with you. For the next 45 minutes, your phone calls on why Oprah Winfrey is so popular with women. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our email address here, feel free to use that too, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's start with Ann, who calls from Crestwood. Ann, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, good afternoon. This, what I'm going to express is simply my own sarcastic viewpoint. I think every time I've tuned in Oprah, which I've never seen a whole program, women are crying. And I think they watch Oprah for the same reason that they listen to Dobson, because there's always going to be a sob story. And I'm not a person that enjoys that. So, and I think a few years ago, Issues called her the New Age guru of our time, and I think that's appropriate.
Thank you very much, Ann. Okay, so Ann, it doesn't appeal to Ann because, well, you're right. There is always a touching moment. Now, you can't necessarily blame Oprah for that. I mean, Oprah is the host of the program, and I imagine she exercises tremendous creative control over what goes on the air. However, her producers probably feel pretty much compelled to produce watchable television. And some of the most watchable television, from after-school specials to nightly dramas, is a tear-jerking moment. Not as bad as Barbara Walters, but yes, women are crying. The guests cry, Oprah cries. Ann says, I don't get into that, but Ann, you're the exception. I mean, I understand that when you turn it on and someone's crying and telling a sob story, that doesn't appeal to you. I understand that completely, but Ann, you are the exception. So there's Ann, one who doesn't watch. She told us why she doesn't watch. If you don't watch, why do your friends watch? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Her magazine, Oh, she's always on the cover. She is the magazine. She'll talk about everything. She'll talk about the one episode I did watch, and I couldn't turn it off, was How Clean Is Your Kitchen? And they had some expert on there, a guy who was telling us about all the germs that live in and around our homes, and how dirty our bathrooms are and how dirty our kitchens are. And then, of course, they had some women on, some guests, where they went to their houses and did scientific tests on their kitchens. And these women, they were eventually crying. Yes, they were crying because their kitchens were so dirty. And then Oprah taught them and gave them advice on, through her guest, on how to get their kitchens cleaner. And then the tears dried up. Do you agree with Eugene Robinson, when he writes in the Washington Post that Oprah's audience has become her church, her congregation, that she is its pastor, that what you find in her show and in her public appearances, like Live Your Best Life 2005, he calls it a liturgy? This is how he ends his column. He says, inside at the Your Best Life extravaganza, attendees heard Oprah speak of her own life experience, how everyone counted her out, how no one thought she could make it, how she believed in herself. They heard her talk about spirituality. They heard Maya Angelou's poem, Phenomenal Woman. And after the liturgy, the women in attendance went forth renewed, like going to church. Now, I'm not going to criticize you for watching Oprah Winfrey. I told you before, my wife watches as often as she doesn't. I'm just curious, what is the appeal? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I want your answer to that question. I know why Dr. Phil appeals. That's clear to me. Even though I don't particularly care for Dr. Phil, I know why he appeals. He will tell people what's wrong. He will look them in the eye and tell them, you're wrong. What you're doing is stupid. And that's the appeal. His appeal is precisely, at least in my estimation, the same as Dr. Laura. Dr. Laura has an appeal with women and with men because it's no nonsense. Take off the gloves. Take responsibility for your own self. Stop whining. But you don't find that on Oprah Winfrey. It is a very kit gloves approach to every problem that anyone has. The person with the problem, unlike with Dr. Phil or Dr. Laura, is always given a huge dose of the benefit of the doubt. Very non-confrontational. In fact, what you heard there from Oprah Winfrey in that bite we played was about as confrontational as she will get. And it's notable what she's willing to be confrontational over. Rick calls from his car. Rick, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, thanks. You asked what's Oprah's appeal. My mother-in-law, she lives with us, and she says because she just does so much good for everyone.
She's a good person.
She just does good for others. She gives them things. She helps them. You know, she puts them upright if they're down, and that's why she likes to watch it.
So she gets to watch Oprah transform lives, in other words.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And she watches it, your mother-in-law?
Evidently, because she tells me about it when I get home.
That's what happens. You know, thank you very much, Rick. This happened with me. My mom, after she retired, when she was retired, she just didn't watch television. But when she retired, she started watching Oprah. I don't know how much she really watches, but when they're with us, it's every afternoon when they come up and stay with us, Oprah's on every afternoon. So I assume that this is part of what my mom watches, her one soap opera and then Oprah. And it's not unusual for the conversation to turn to what I saw on Oprah the other day. Okay, is that the appeal? She is fabulously wealthy. And so she is able to, with a stroke of a pen in her checkbook, change a person's life. She can solve a problem. If the problem can be solved with money, she can solve it. She can, with a stroke of a pen in her checkbook, build a new wing on a children's hospital that will, beyond a shadow of a doubt, benefit children who have cancer. She's done it. She's probably done it more times than I've paid my electric bill. Who knows? And with that kind of power, that kind of influence she can draw with her audience, she can transform lives, at least outwardly. Is that the appeal? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Up next, Ruthie calling from her car. Ruthie, welcome.
Hi, I have only seen her show a few times, but I think she is accessible. What you see is what you get with Oprah. People feel like that's how she would act in their living room. There's no pretense. You feel very comfortable with her. It's kind of like Joel Osteen. I have to say, I feel like if I met Joel Osteen, what I would see is what I would get and that I would feel comfortable around him.
Okay, just stay on for a second, if you would, Ruthie. Does Joel Osteen appeal to you?
No, absolutely not. I mean, and all I've ever heard is from your program. I've never seen him on TV. But it's that down-to-earthness that you really feel that if he walked into your living room, he wouldn't care if it were a mess, and he would just talk to you.
That's interesting, Ruthie. Thank you. Now, see, this is why we need women to tell us these things. Here are three guys sitting in a room here speculating. You know, one's punching buttons, and the other one's talking, and I don't know what Jeff does in there. Something. And here we are trying to figure out why does Oprah appeal? And Ruthie lays, I never would have thought of that. If she came into your house, she would focus on you. If she came into your house, no masks, no pretense. Yes, she's fabulously wealthy. And she would be herself. You gotta say, I mean, just in terms of human communication, someone who gives the impression, if only the impression on television, that they are exactly who they are on camera as off camera, is very appealing to everybody. But I gotta wonder, don't women want masks? I mean, Oprah does a very good job of at least giving the impression that she is transparent. She is accessible, to use Ruthie's word. But how much honesty do women really want? I mean, I can only speak as a male. My dear wife, although she does not listen, if she is listening, she can roll her eyes at will at this point. But, you know, honesty is something that should be judiciously practiced depending on one's circumstances, when I'm only talking as a guy, when dealing with a woman. Any man who's been married for any amount of time will tell you that when there are certain questions to which their wife does not want an honest answer. Or if she wants an honest answer, she wants it put so diplomatically, usually far beyond the husband's capability to produce. She wants it put so diplomatically so she gets the impression that she knows what she was asking for, but it wasn't put honestly. Now, Oprah gives the impression of very transparent honesty, and maybe that's the appeal. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, the old scenario, the old chestnut is when your woman asks, when your woman or your wife asks you, does this dress make me look fat? Not the moment for honesty, unless, of course, you can honestly answer, no, no. Now, most women don't ask that question. I mean, at least that's my experience. But when the question is asked, any male within the range of that woman's, the sound of that woman's voice, should consider carefully before answering. Mary calls from St. Louis. Our time grows short as we go to this break, but we've got more open lines on the other side of the break, talking about Oprah Winfrey and her appeal to women. Mary, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Hi, Mary.
I was just calling the... I caught the end of this so far. I don't know what you've talked about earlier, but I think the appeal of Oprah is women issues. Oprah has, you know, tips on how to look better, how to have your house better, you know, things that women want to know about, I guess. It's kind of like those magazines, but...
So she's a woman's magazine personified.
Right.
Mary, thank you. Okay, now see, there's a very mundane appeal of Oprah. She, if you want a cleaner house, a better looking house, a nicer garden, it's kind of the Martha Stewart aspect of Oprah, but Oprah's got so much more than that, of course. Jennifer calls from her car. Jennifer, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for taking my call. I am not an Oprah watcher. I can't stand Oprah, so I guess, but I did want to say what I think that appeals to women or anybody who watches it is that she tells people what they want to hear. She talks about everybody's innately good and everybody's wonderful and, you know, empowering women to share their feelings and, you know, do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying, Jennifer, and thank you. Okay, see, I'm writing this stuff down because this is not the kind of stuff I would come up with on my own. I am biologically and physiologically incapable of coming up with these answers. So Oprah tells women what they want to hear. Oprah, and she personifies it in many ways. She is successful. She is everything that perhaps a woman would want to be. We'll talk more about this on the other side of the break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Call during this break. It's open lines for the next 25
minutes. Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.